Muted yourself. You are unmuted, June, my friend.
Oh. Okay, thank you. Hi, my name is June. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, June.
And thank you so much for letting me be a part of the weekend. I'm sorry I'm not able to do all of the weekend, but I have actually been over Zooming. I'll tell you my sobriety date, which is July the 13th, 1972. But I actually was invited by Cynthia to talk, not to tell my story, which I'm grateful for, because as I said, I've over Zoomed a bit, but to tell you a little bit about the first woman to get sober west of the Mississippi, which I just heard Mary mentioning, and Gail, etc. I had the privilege, because I did get sober in 1972, of knowing many of the first generation members of Alcoholics Anonymous in the Los Angeles area and in some other states. And those are people that I consider to have gotten sober before 1960, that being the first 25 years Alcoholics Anonymous existed. So I wanted to tell you, like I said, about Sybil. So Sybil, I was thinking about this too, because it's Mother's Day. Sybil was a mom, and that was one of the most important things that she wanted to be able to be in her life. And Sybil was a different kind of alcoholic than I was, where she would find herself getting drunk and she didn't want to. And she didn't understand what was happening. And Sybil was married. I think this was husband number two at this time. And she was married to a man who had adopted her daughter and agreed to raise her as his own. But Sybil kept having these binges that she didn't want to have. She would literally go to the store to buy milk and not come home for 2 or 3 days. And she would wake up in different cities. And so she was terribly ashamed and horrified that she kept doing this, and she didn't want to do it, but it just kept happening. And the last time it had happened, her husband said, "If you ever do that again, I'm going to take your daughter away from you." And Sybil was just horrified because, like I said, the thing that was the most important in the world to her was she wanted to be a decent, good mother. And yet, sure enough, because she had alcoholism, she found herself a few weeks later in San Francisco, where she did not live, having been gone a couple of days. And she was mortified and terrified that he would take her daughter away. And while she was recovering that day and shaking and very, very sick, she went to a bathhouse in San Francisco. And while there, she was flipping through a magazine, and it turned out to be that she came upon the Jack Alexander article in the Saturday Evening Post. And she was too sick to read that article, but she saw the picture that many of us have seen of the two men sitting by the man in the hospital bed. So she got paper and pencil, paper and envelope and a stamp, and she wrote a letter to New York. The address was in that article. And she said, "Dear AA, I'm a terrible, shameful woman alcoholic. Please send your AA ambulance for me. I'll do anything." And she always said she got a letter back very quickly, considering, the time. And the letter said, "We don't have an AA ambulance or an AA hospital. But it turns out that since you live in Los Angeles, there happens to be one meeting a week." And they gave her the address of that meeting. And she was terrified. She was very sick. And she told her husband about the meeting. And he said he agreed to take her because obviously he thought she needed help. So they went down to the hall, and it was just a little, open hall where they would have the meeting. And they were men and women there. And they were talking before the meeting. Sybil had a scarf wrapped around her hair because her hair was so matted and she couldn't have gotten a comb through it at all. And she was shaking. She was pretty sick. And the men and women were kind of chatting and seemed kind of happy. And then all of a sudden, one of the men stood up and he said, "Okay, we're going to start the meeting now. So all the women have to leave." And the women all left, including Sybil. They sat outside of the room where the meeting was going to go on, but they took Sybil's husband inside the meeting, being a man. And Sybil's husband was not an alcoholic, and he explained that to them. But these men had heard that sort of thing before, and they were not going to just listen to someone tell them they weren't an alcoholic. And back then in Los Angeles, probably in other areas, but in Los Angeles, since there was only one meeting a week, many of these men had driven 2, 3, and 4 hours just to get to that meeting. So the meeting did not begin and end at an exact fixed time like we're pretty good about doing these days. That meeting could go on for hours, as long as it needed to go. So that meeting that night did go on for hours while they explained to Sybil's husband about denial and about alcoholism and all the things they all needed to share with him. And finally, after a few hours, they let him out of the meeting. And he came out and he and Sybil left. And Sybil dropped him off at home. And she went to a bar and got really, really drunk because she knew that part of the reason she'd been thrown out of the meeting was because they didn't want a woman who looked like her and smelled like her and shook like her. And after she'd been drinking a while, toward the end of the night when the bar was about to close, she remembered that in the letter they'd sent her from New York, there was a name and a phone number. Excuse me. And so she called that man, Cliff Walker, in the middle of the night, about 2 a.m. And she told him, she said, I was down at your meeting tonight and they threw me out. And she said, I just want to let you know, I'm going to report you tomorrow to that New York office and I'm going to have you fired. And Cliff explained to her, you know, I'm not hired. I'm not an employee. He said, but you know, I wasn't able to be there tonight, Sybil, but we've never had a woman alcoholic. The women that come on our weekly meeting, they're the wives who are making sure that their husbands come to the meeting. So please come back next week. I'll meet you there. And Sybil's husband, believe it or not, was not willing to go to another meeting with her. So instead, Sybil went and talked to her brother. And Sybil's brother was a big guy whose nickname was Tex. But he had stopped drinking with Sybil because she was a tiny little thing, but she was always getting Tex wrapped up in a bunch of really serious fights. And so she was telling him about the meeting and he agreed to go to the meeting with her. And that Sunday, before they went to the meeting, Tex called all of his employees. He owned a farm and he had a lot of fruit pickers that worked for him. And he told all his employees that they either had to go to AA or he was going to fire them because he knew a lot of them were drinking. And he figured if he got them sober in AA, they'd do more work. So he loaded up the back of his truck with all of his employees and he and Sybil rode in the front. And they went to the local meeting in Los Angeles. And when they got there, they had come and brought more people than were actually sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous at that meeting that night. But anyway, the meeting carried on. And at the end of the meeting, this is, as I mentioned, shortly after the Jack Alexander article. So this is in 1941, which means that Alcoholics Anonymous was about 6 years old, not quite 6 years old. It was in March. And at the end of the meeting, the guy who ran the group was a guy named Frank Randall. And Frank handed out pillowcases and bags filled with mail because Alcoholics Anonymous had received so many hundreds and hundreds of letters. And so he gave out a letter to one of the guys that had driven all the way from San Diego. He gave out that bag of letters from that whole area. He gave out another bag of letters to someone who had driven from the Orange County area of California. He gave out another bag of letters to someone who'd come in from Bakersfield, another one for someone who'd come out from Fresno, which was, as I said, maybe 5 hours back then with the roads, maybe more. And at the end of that, he had one bag left. And he said, all right, guys, he said, we have a woman alcoholic. Sybil, come on up here. And Sybil walked up there and she was shaking and she was scared and almost on the verge of tears. And he said, now, Sybil, he said, I'm going to give you this bag of letters. These are all the women that have contacted Alcoholics Anonymous in the Los Angeles area. And I'm going to put you in charge of all the women. And she said, oh, don't do that. And he said, why not? She said, I've never stayed sober a week. I won't be able to do that. And he said, well, you know, let's go ahead and give it a try. You're the only woman that we've got that can contact these women. And she said, well, you know, what will I tell them? And he said, well, not much because you don't know much. You've only been to one meeting. He said, but why don't you walk up to these women and knock on the door and show them their letter and say, did you write this letter? I wrote a letter just like this. And I've been down there one time and they seem like maybe they have something. And if you come with me, maybe we can find out more about it together. And so Sybil took that bag of letters. And Sybil's brother, Tex, drove Sybil to every one of those calls all around the greater Los Angeles area. And Sybil never drank again, and neither did Tex. When Sybil did die, it was in 1988. And Sybil had 57 years of sobriety at that time. And she was the longest living sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous in the world. At that time, obviously, we have people, you know, many people who've lived more than 57 years sober since then. And I think I was going to just tell you, I'm going to tell you one other story because I think this becomes really important as well. And I'm looking for this letter that I wanted to read you that kind of goes with it. So I mentioned Tex, and that was Sybil's brother. And let's see if I've got it here. No, not right there. Okay. So Sybil's brother, Tex, never drank again. And he started what we consider to be the first kind of a clubhouse here in Los Angeles. It was called the Hole in the Ground. And the meeting was like in a basement. We don't have very many basements out here in California. So that was probably why they did that. And he stayed very active and worked with a lot of people. And Sybil and he were very, very close. In the years that that he was alive. And Sybil had, when she was about, when she was about 15 years sober, she and Tex had started a business, and it was a boxing business, and it did really well the first year. But the next year, TV came out for everybody. People started having a TV in their home, and nobody went out to the boxing ring, and they ended up having to file bankruptcy, and both her and Tex, and so they lost their, you know, their savings and their money. And at the same time, Tex became very, very sick, and Tex, who was her, you know, her best friend, got really sick. Right around this time that he was getting sick, Sybil was married. And I think this was husband number three. And he was not an alcoholic either. And Sybil was very, very active in Alcoholics Anonymous from the time that she and Tex both got sober. And so one night she came home from a meeting. And when she walked in the door, her husband said, "You know, Sybil, we've been having some problems in our marriage." And he said, "I think I know how we can fix those problems." And so when she walked in, he poured her a glass of wine and he said, "I like you better when you're drinking." And so she went upstairs and she packed a bag and she left that marriage. And just shortly thereafter, her brother Tex did die of cancer. And so Sybil was having a very hard time. And she wrote a letter to Bill Wilson. And I'm going to see if now I can get my technical data here to work so that I can, here we go. So she wrote a letter to Bill Wilson telling him about what had gone on, and her she was friends with Bill and Lois. And so she wrote this letter to Bill Wilson, and Bill wrote back this letter. And so at this time, as I said, Sybil's about 15 years sober. It's dated November 6th, 1952. Oh, I guess she's 11 years sober. Sorry. Okay. "My dear Sybil, thanks for your letter of October 21st. It was just about the most stirring thing I have read in many a day. The real test of our way of life is how it works when the chips are down. Though I've sometimes seen AAs make rather a mess of living, I've never seen a sober one make a bad job of dying. But the account you give me of Tex's last days is something I shall treasure always. I hope I can do half as well when my time comes. I am one who believes that in my father's house there are many mansions. If that were not so, there couldn't be any justice. I can almost see Tex sitting on the front porch of one right now, talking in the sunlight with others of God's ladies and gentlemen who have gone on before. I certainly agree with you that little was left in Tex's grave. All he had was carried behind in the hearts of the rest of us, and he carried just that same amount forward to where he is now. If you like what I've said, please read it to the Huntington Park group. In any case, congratulate them for me that they had the privilege of knowing a guy like Tex. As for you, my dear, there's no need to give you advice. How well you understand that the demonstration is the thing after all. It isn't so much a question of whether we have a good time or a bad time. The only thing that will be asked is what we do with the experience we have. That you are doing well with your tough lot is something for which I and many others are bound to be grateful. This is but a long day in school. Some of the lessons are hard and others are easy. I hope you will keep on learning and passing what you've learned. What more does one person need to know about another? Affectionately yours, Bill." And, you know, for me, Sybil had a huge influence on my life throughout my sobriety, and I had the privilege of getting to know her and her husband, Bob, Corwin, her final husband, her fifth husband. And, you know, the thing is that it's a pretty dramatic story to be the only woman and the first woman to come in west of the Mississippi anyway. And I'm sure that I know from talking to her and from listening to her CDs that was quite a journey and difficult at different times. But the one thing I wanted to mention today is that, you know, particularly us in the United States, we really have taken for granted tremendously the number and the availability of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, not just for the women, but certainly in some ways, even more for the women in other countries. And I received a letter just this week from a woman in Tehran and, you know, explaining her experience and how difficult it was for women to go to a meeting and still is for women to be seen at a meeting or to meet in that kind of circumstance. Even to talk about drinking is an offense. And I've been to meetings in other countries. I've been to a meeting in Costa Rica, a Spanish-speaking meeting, and there were no women there that night. They said that sometimes women come, but you know, it's just as hard to get sober in 2020 as it was whenever each one of us got sober. And sometimes, as I said, we take it for granted. And some of these other countries don't have the experience with the traditions that we have and that reminder that the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. So I always hope that when I tell you this story about Sybil, that you'll be aware that this is still happening in other parts of the world. And that hopefully, you know, this Zoom experience, I've been to meetings this past week in Israel, in Iran, in New York, in Florida, you know, in a bunch of different places. And really, since we can't have our international convention this year to celebrate 85 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, please try to take advantage of this Zoom format and experience some of AA internationally. And as Cynthia, you know, and Mary, and I'm sure Gail probably said earlier too, let's please try to support our New York General Service Office, because that is a big part of what's helping us all stay connected. Thank you for letting me be a part of your weekend.